Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy on KFI is provided by DSL Extreme at dslextreme.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my KFI podcast. This show originally aired on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles on Sunday, November 26th, 2006. This is show 304.
November 26th, 2006.
KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks at 11:06. I'm Ginger Chan, KFI News.
KFI, 11:07. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy on KFI, and a very good morning. How are you today? It's time to talk high tech. Everything having to do with computers, the internet, MP3 players, cell phones, camcorders, home theater, basically technology in general. I'm here till 2 this afternoon, as I am every Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Again, the phone number, 1-800-520-1KFI. Did you see the Michael Richards, Kramer's diatribe? Of course you did. It was on the internet. You might have seen it on TV, although they'd have to bleep it pretty much entirely to put it on TV. But you saw it on the internet. Like nowadays, we're seeing a lot of things on the internet. It's really kind of amazing what's happening. I think we're headed towards an era of absolute non-privacy. No matter what happens, somebody's recording it. And thanks to YouTube, somebody's posting it. And if somebody has an axe to grind, many people may see it. It's an interesting kind of ugly side in some ways to the revolution that we talk about on this show. I've talked a long time about this, and I think that one of the really most important, one of the salient features of the computer and digital and technology revolution is that it puts creative tools in the hands of everybody. It makes them affordable. Anybody can record an album now. It used to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. Anybody can make a movie now. It used to cost millions of dollars. It's cheap and easy. And thanks to the internet, there's now a means of distribution. So each and every one of us is really on a par with the biggest broadcast entities. We can all make our own radios and TV shows and movies and albums and distribute them ourselves and reach a global audience. In some ways, as time goes by, it's the internet's proving a better means of distribution, certainly more cost effective. But a lot of these distribution channels are national. You know, they stop at the borders, not the internet. It goes everywhere. So it's really kind of a revolution. And for a long time, I thought, well, this is really great, right? It empowers everybody. And in some ways, it's great for politics, too. I mean, I think we first became aware of this maybe with the Rodney King videotape, right? Now, this was pre-internet or pre-widespread use of the internet. So it started because lots of people had camcorders. Consumers suddenly were able to take video. And so somebody had a video of this beating, of this horrendous beating. But it took the news agencies to distribute it, to create an audience for it, and then ultimately for the riots to happen. But the videotape wouldn't have existed if it weren't for cheap camcorders. Well, now you fast forward a little bit. It just happened again recently, right? A videotape of a police beating. This time, though, didn't matter if the news media picked it up. It went on YouTube. And the attention it got on YouTube was sufficient, frankly, to get the LAPD to do an investigation. So you see. But then I think of other stories, like, for instance, I don't remember his name, I feel so bad for him. The college football player, you remember that? The camera, now this was a TV camera, caught him picking his nose on the sidelines. And by the way, one of the reasons I don't know what it is if you search for nose pick on YouTube, you'll find quite a bit of video. No longer a private occupation, if you do it in public anyway. There's cameras everywhere, and especially now with cell phones, there are cameras everywhere, still and video. So this poor guy, this poor kid, I mean, look, he's, you know, he's tired. He picks his nose. Here's his big mistake. He looks at it, then he eats it. Oh, ooh. Okay. I'm sorry to give you that image. I hope you're not eating brunch right now. But of course, that video makes it to YouTube, makes the rounds. Hundreds of thousands of people have seen it now. There's no privacy for this kid. And what might have been, you know, a little blip, 15 minutes of embarrassment now might go on for years. And that brings us to Michael Richards, Kramer, and his comedy club diatribe. You probably heard the story now. I mean, just a horribly offensive racist diatribe. He just loses it. I'll be honest, looking at the video, it looks like he has a psychotic break. I mean, he just loses it. And says horrendously offensive things. Now, that video probably would have been aired, you know, on a, you know, Inside Hollywood or Access Hollywood or whatever, and I'm Inside Edition. I'm sure it would have been aired in a few places, and it might have blown over. But thanks to YouTube and TMZ, which is actually the website that's got it, you can see that everywhere over and over again. They bloop it, but it's pretty clear what he's saying. Oh, well, I forget. There's also subtitles just to make it a little easier to understand. Now, that's taken what might have been just a very embarrassing incident, something he could have apologized for and moved on into probably a career ender, right? Because everybody's seen it. TV didn't have to air it. YouTube makes it available to everyone, and frankly, it lives on forever. Bloggers pick it up. You know, instead, look what's changed. For instance, you know, I think back to how the news media, when it was just a small number of organizations, they could collude to keep things out of the media. JFK's romantic dalliances. Actually, every president, LBJ, Roosevelt. I mean, there's a long history of the press protecting the president. But the problem is, if one person publishes a story, if Matt Drudge then publishes that story about Monica Lewinsky, then Newsweek picks it up and everybody else has to pick it up because it's now public record. I think Gary Hart and the monkey business thing was the first time that there was a crack in the media. Up till then, the media had agreed. Now, you know, this is off limits. We won't cover this guy's personal life. But with Gary Hart as a candidate for president, people realize it's a character issue. It's got to come out. The press picked it up. And of course, now, because there are, instead of just a half dozen or a dozen major news organizations, it started with Matt Drudge, but now there's millions of bloggers out there, none of whom have any scruples about saying anything, true or not. And of course, once a story gets out, the mainstream press has to pick it up. They can't ignore it. And there's no one who can get an agreement from 100,000 bloggers not to publish a story. So I think you could pretty much assume that anything somebody can find out will become the news. There is no privacy. I'm not sure that's bad or good. It's, you know, you feel bad for somebody like that college football player. You feel not so bad for somebody like maybe Michael Kramer. Or Michael Richards Kramer is certainly a different era we live in. And what I fear is that as we go forward, that there's nothing you can do in private anymore. You're going to have to lock the doors, draw the blinds, search for cameras and bugs, and pretty much assume that if you're out in public, somebody's videotaping you, and you better think about what you're doing because it could make it onto YouTube. We've created a culture of snoops, and, you know, humans love gossip. We love this stuff. Nothing is private anymore. So this is, you know, usually I talk about the positive side of technology. You know, it really is great that anybody can make their own book, write a novel and publish it themselves, make a radio show or a TV show, publish it themselves, reach a huge audience. I've created basically a radio network, the Twit network, with no money, reaching hundreds of thousands of people, actually 4 million downloads a month, just by myself sitting in a little room. So that's great. That's the positive side of it. The negative side is there may be a cost to our personal lives, to our privacy. And if you're a public figure in any way, there's a very high price to be paid now. There always has been a high price. But now nothing is sacred and nothing is secret. And with YouTube, everybody will see every detail of your life, because it is being recorded and it is being published. And I don't know if that's a good thing. I don't think there's anything you can do about it. It's just something to be aware of next time you're walking down the street picking your nose. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. You know, you could bet I'm not doing that. Wait a minute. I've got a camera on me right now. Hold up. Holy cow.
I already got it on YouTube.
Chris, my producer, says, it's already on YouTube. I confess, there are a few pictures, unflattering pictures of me around. I will admit it. But I do it on purpose. You know, I've got a camera on. I've got a webcam on, which you can see if you go to leo.am, my website. Maybe that's a bad idea. 1-800-520-1KFI. 1-800-520-1534. Hey, let's talk about that and anything else you'd like to talk about having to do with high tech. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1117.
Making common sense more common. John and Ken, tomorrow 3 to 7. KFI, AM 640.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. Jeffrey in Van Nuys, welcome to KFI.
Hi, thank you. I have a question. I have a website. It's advantagecatering.com.
Okay.
And my question is on my email form. I have this page called Contact Us, and people fill out a form on there.
Okay.
And then they click submit, and then it's supposed to send the form to me. Now, when I first created it, it actually sent the form to. But now, what it does, and I can't figure out why it changed, is that it says email from equals Jeff percentage
right.
Advantage. You know, so it kind of like does it, and a lot of my people don't want to open up their email program and have to click send. And I wanted to
You're saying instead of just sending it through the server, it's now opening their email program with all this stuff in it already.
Right, and then it sends it to me.
So who does the website for you? Did you do it yourself?
I did it myself in Go Live.
Okay. So what's happened is you must have modified the form. Normally when you have a form like that, when you hit the submit button, it does a post. Instead,
right.
Instead now what it's doing is it's actually a mail to link. So you need to actually look in that form and in Go Live, you'll need to, it's probably drop downs and preferences for that form, but you'll need to change the preferences so that it uses the server instead of using the local email client.
Okay.
So it's something you've done in Go Live.
Yeah.
Normally,
I don't think I've changed it, you know, but.
Yeah. Well, it could be that they changed the way your server's behaving. Normally, this is something most people would contract out. I mean, this is something for a web designer to do more than doing it in Go Live. You're brave. You're a brave man. And it's not going to cost a whole lot to go out and get somebody to do this. I talked to somebody yesterday who said, should I design my own site? I said, well, unless you want to become a web expert, I wouldn't. Right? If this is your goal in life, I'd like to have as a side business besides catering, I'd like to be also able to design websites. But if not,
I'm a video engineer on the site.
Oh, well, you know a little bit about the technology anyway. So if this is your desire, then okay. Here's the problem.
I have one more question for you.
Yeah.
You know, on some websites, when you go to their websites, on the address bar, it has the company's logo and then the web address.
Right. You'd like to have that? Yeah. It's called a fav icon. FAVICON. You need to create it. FAV. If you do a Google for FAVICON, favicon. There are a bunch of websites that will take an image. You upload an image to it, and it will then create. Basically, it's a .ico file. It's an icon file, the 16 by 16 icon.
Okay.
And if you just type in favicon in Google, there'll be about 20 sites that will take any image that you upload and create that 16 by 16 icon. Now, obviously, the simpler the image, the better. If you go to my page, if you go to leo.am, it's my head. But you can't.
Right.
But you can't really tell. You know, it'd probably be better to have something a little simpler as my favicon. I guess if you know what you're looking for, it kind of looks like my head. But remember, you only have 16 dots across by 16 dots down. You don't have a lot of space to do something.
Right.
If you go to my other site, twit.tv, I have the Twit logo. And one of the reasons that we use that logo is it's a much simpler logo and it makes a better favicon. So if you
I have a simple one. It's a little Jewish star.
Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Yeah, it's made out of Hamantaschen, so.
Oh, that's great. Now, you wouldn't be able to tell it's Hamantaschen. You probably should just get a Star of David line art and upload it to these sites. But that would be great. What is the site again?
It's advantagecatering.com.
Sounds good. So it's so you do seders and stuff.
Yeah, well, I do all kinds of events. I do not only Jewish events, but I do all kinds of events. I specialize in vegan cooking and stuff like that.
Vegan kosher?
Vegan kosher.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. Oh, I like it, the Hamantaschen. That actually I'm looking at the site now. That might make a decent favicon. What you'll do is you take that image and go to one of these favicon generators. Just see what you get and see if it looks any good. Once you get that file, they have instructions on the site, but you'll put it in the root directory of your website.
Okay.
So I'm going to look. So is it contact us? Is that where that form is?
Yeah, the contact
us. Okay, I see there. So let me look at the source code. I don't want to get too much into diagnosing
this issue,
but let me just look at the source code real quick. It'll be the thing about forms is that's a pretty advanced topic in HTML design. Form action is wrong. Okay. So I'm looking at the form. Your form action is mailed to, it's mailed to Jeff at, you don't want that.
Okay.
That's, you've changed the action. So you need to go in there and tell it the form action is to do something else. I'm not sure exactly what choices Go Live will give you, but you've got the wrong choice in there. It's doing a mail to.
Okay.
And a mail to means when you click that link, it tells the browser, open up the local email client and send me an email. That's not what you want. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1129, Ginger Chan's in the KFI News Center.
Information doesn't take the weekend off.
Neither do we.
KFI, all weekend long.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI. I took Jeffrey's Hamantaschen, which, boy, they sure look good, from his website, and I ran it through the icon generator we've got on the show notes. And it actually, you know, it's better than a line art Star of David. It looks great. It's a great favicon. You never know. You just never know. That's why these favicon generator sites are so great. If the first site, if you type favicon in Google, F-A-V-I-C-O-N, is not the one I would use. It's the second site down. It's great. Highly recommended. That's what you should use, Jeffrey, and it's just a little bit of polish to the site. It's fun doing I just want to kind of clarify, it's fun doing your own website. And with tools like Go Live, or Front Page, it's fairly easy, but what'll happen inevitably is you get in a little trouble, as Jeffrey has. It gets a little too advanced, and then you can't figure out what the heck's wrong. And unless you know HTML, you're not going to be able to fix it. So I guess if it's a hobby, if it's your personal site, fine. Play with it. You know, learn. A mistake's not going to kill you. If it's your business and that form has to work right, it might be worth paying a college kid $50 or $100. They're learning HTML. They know what to do. I mean, I can look at it and I tell you what to do. And I'm no HTML wizard. It's not that complicated. But it in fact, it's probably something you could look at the source. If you can look at the source code, as I did, and spot it, as I did right away, then you'll be able to fix it. You just need a good book on HTML. You look up forms, and you see, oh, wait a minute, no, I shouldn't be mailed to there. It should be something else. But if you feel uncomfortable with that, or it's your business and your chance to make a livelihood resting on it, spend a little money. Get an expert. You wouldn't do your own plumbing, then maybe you shouldn't be doing your own website. It seems easy with these tools until something goes wrong. Randy and Reseda, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech.
Yeah, hi, Leo.
Hey, Randy.
I heard Randy's thing, and I've dealt with some of that form stuff, and he needs to have his button say action equals post instead of action equals mail.
No, he's got action equals post. The problem is that before that, it's a mail to. So he has the post correct. It's the mail to before it, and it's a simple thing to fix, but I can't remember off the top of my head what the syntax is.
Yeah, there's a lot of good information on the web about form.pl, the documentation that they use for processing that stuff, and it has a lot of description about tags where I found most of the good information.
You may not. See, that's the problem, is that's a Perl script that your web server is supporting to process the forms. That's not universal. That's not a standard. So what you've learned, it may be applicable to him and it may not be. And this is where you get into, that's why I say get an expert. So you obviously do your own website, yeah?
Some, yeah. I've been working with moving into the new thing of PHP, pulling off a database, and getting familiar with that.
That's the way to do it, ultimately, I think, yeah.
I had a golden idea about trading BitTorrent bandwidth for possible net credit, as I can tell you about, but I have a question foremostly about updating Linux, namely Fedora Core 5 to Fedora Core 6.
Okay.
Using the Yum updater for an RPM-based update.
Okay.
Don't know. I don't know. You use SUSE. I don't know if that's based on RPM
all,
updates.
And it is also. Well, I can't remember, but I know. I certainly know how to do it in Fedora.
Yeah, so, I did. I updated this version 5.
You want to update the kernel? Is that what you're trying to do, or you want to update the whole thing?
I want to update the whole thing to the new Core 6 that handles Windows files as well. And I got as far as doing an update off of the DVD of 6 DVD installer. Then I went to do a Yum update, and as it ended up, it did not handle the NTFS files and didn't seem to be completely updated. But when I tried to do the update, it spit out a bunch of garbage, leading me to believe that the update was still locked into stuff on version 5.
What I would recommend, I'm not going to spend too much time on this. It's fairly advanced. And the good news is it's well documented on the web. Yum works very well. It's nominally just a couple of steps. You install the release package from the new release. You run Yum upgrade and you reboot. If you get in trouble, as you have, then you want to go to the Yum upgrade FAQ, which is at fedoraproject.org/wiki/yum-upgrade-faq. I'll put a link in the show notes. And you want to look at the wiki. And there'll be somebody there who said, it happened to me, and this is what I did, and I don't want to get in too much detail about how to fix that. But that's how you can do it, Randy. Rick Encino, KFI, Leo LaPointe.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Hey, Rick.
I have got a really thorny problem with iTunes and QuickTime. I'm running on a Windows PC with XP and Service Pack 2. And when I updated to the most recent version of iTunes, basically it ate the installation.
Yeah.
And it won't allow it to run. And I'm getting all kinds of error messages about QuickTime. And
yeah, Apple has a lot of problems, frankly, with iTunes on Windows. And this is a very common one. Sometimes it is just the QuickTime issue. What I would probably do at this point is uninstall everything and get the, you can get iTunes. Is your QuickTime working at all?
No, that's the problem. QuickTime doesn't work. I did actually uninstall everything, tried to do an old version.
Well, here's what I would do. I would do iTunes and QuickTime separately. Because there is an iTunes without QuickTime for Windows. And this is what I recommend to Windows users who are having trouble. For some reason, QuickTime 7 is a real nightmare on Windows. Mm-hmm. What you might try doing is, what I would suggest is uninstalling everything. Install QuickTime 6. Or maybe just try installing QuickTime 7. If you can get a good install of QuickTime 7 by itself, not trying to do it at the same time of iTunes, then you can get the iTunes without QuickTime. And I'll put a link in the show notes to that download. Apple kind of hides it. But there is a download of iTunes without QuickTime. Once you install QuickTime and get it running, then you can install iTunes.
Right.
And everything should work fine. You do need QuickTime to play back a lot of the music that iTunes plays.
Well, actually, iTunes won't even install without QuickTime. Plus, I mean, Rocket Boom, a lot of things that I use are...
Right, you know, they're all QuickTime. No, you want QuickTime, obviously.
Okay,
So that's what I would try. I would do QuickTime separately.
Okay, because I did actually go into the registry and delete all the references to QuickTime. I mean, I've really been through the ringer with this.
I think the problem often is that try to do the multi-installer.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what would happen if you tried to install iTunes 7 with QuickTime 6. To be honest, I don't know if that would work or not.
Mm-hmm.
What I would suggest is what I said, which is uninstall, clean everything out.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure everything's working. Everything's fine now. Then just install QuickTime 7 standalone.
Right.
Do you have Pro or you just do the regular QuickTime?
Actually, I just regular QuickTime.
Okay, so just install it and see if it's working.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now in other words, we're building this castle, this house of cards, one layer at a time.
Right.
It will work. I mean, it works on most people's computers. It's just, and I'm not sure... There may be some issue. You know, maybe, well, it turns out that Roxio 6... doesn't, you know, and there may be some, and this is the problem with Windows, it's such an unknown environment. There's so many programs it could be.
Right.
So many drivers could be conflicting. So it may be that there's something on your system that is conflicting and you'll never get QuickTime 7 working. Mm-hmm. Or it may just be it was a bad install and, you know, things didn't go quite right, in which case the step-by-step might work better.
Right. Okay, I'll give it a try.
Give it a try. Let me know, because I'm kind of collecting a database. Put something in the show notes. I'll turn the comments on right now. I'm trying to collect a database of people who have trouble with Windows and iTunes, but who do manage to get it working. You know, there's just been this, you almost want to say Apple is screwing with Windows, right? Because it's not a product of theirs. But I don't think it is. There is a lot at stake. They make a lot of money on iPods selling them to Windows users. They make a lot of money on the iTunes Music Store selling music to Windows users. It's not in their interest, frankly, to make it not work on Windows. I think more it's a problem that there's Windows, and this is a problem Microsoft has and every other Windows developer has, is such a heterogeneous environment. It's totally unpredictable. You know, Apple's got this great advantage. They make the hardware. There's fewer programs. They kind of know what the environment's like. Windows, you have no idea what you're walking into. And, you know, Apple clearly needs to do a better job with QuickTime 7. It's been out a while now. Remember, it took a long time to get it out for Windows, and I think this is one of the reasons. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1158.
They never back down. John and Ken, tomorrow, 3 to 7.
KFI, AM 640.
1153, 7 away from noon. KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Let's go to Redondo Beach. Andy is on the line. Hello, Andy. Welcome to KFI.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Hey, I've got like 180 gigs of music, and I'm trying to find, you know, I dump them all onto my iPod, and I want to find a way I can delete a song from my iPod directly.
Instead of doing it through iTunes.
Yeah, because then I have to, you know, I'm sitting in my car, I got time, rather than just sitting one by one at the computer.
Wouldn't you like to be able to just do that in the iPod, you mean?
Yeah.
No can do, unfortunately. There is no... The iPod doesn't... You'd think it would. That seems like a simple enough thing. But there is no command on the iPod to delete it. You have to actually hook it up to a computer. You can run iTunes or run some other software to delete, but not from the iPod.
How about in iTunes, when I select, you know, show duplicate songs?
Yeah.
And it shows them all, but I have, like, 3,000 duplicate songs.
Oh, dear.
Is there any way to, when you go to select them all, to select every other one?
Yeah, right. That's what you want to do, isn't it? There are Apple... Oh, you're on a PC, though, right? Okay, there are on the Mac, there are AppleScript programs that will do that. I don't know of any of the PC, but the good news is, finally, there's a decent command line language. Microsoft just released PowerShell on Windows XP, and it's going to be out for Vista any minute now. And that's the reason AppleScript is to do it on the Mac is because it's easy to write AppleScript programs to do that kind of thing. It's a little harder on the PC. You'd actually have to start doing some real programming. Maybe PowerShell will make it easier. Maybe somebody has written a program to do that. I'll have to look and see. I don't know of one. But yeah, there's no doing it by hand on thousands of songs is not worth it. You need some sort of program that will go through your folders and say, well, I know the name is the same name with the number one after it, but that's a duplicate.
Right.
And we want to get rid of that one with the number one. I have some with number two, three, four, and five after them. It does that. And it's very easy to get duplicate songs, wasting a lot of space. Let me, you know, I know how to do it in the Mac. I don't know how to do it on the Windows. Let me ask and see if anybody does. And let me do some research. I bet you before the hour is out, I'll be able to find some solution for you. And that is something Apple never put in the iPod. The iPod doesn't really have much in terms of management. You can't create folders. You can't move songs from folder to folder. You can't delete songs. The best you can do is this on-the-go feature where you can create an on-the-go playlist. It's pretty rudimentary and painful. But you can, if you're listening to a song, you say, I want to add that to an on-the-go playlist. You press and hold the select button until it blinks. You can go to another song. Even while that first song is playing, do the same. And you can build a playlist, which you can then play. Allows you to play it on the fly. Certainly not something to do while you're driving. It takes a lot of attention. The iPod is just not designed to do that. And I think, if anything, that's a failing. But wouldn't that have been a nice feature for Microsoft to put in the Zune? You know, if all these companies are trying to figure out ways to beat the iPod. And maybe that's one way to do it, is a little smarter music handling. 1-800-520-1KFI, Rusty Corona, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Rusty.
Oh, hello. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Just wandering around the house with the cordless phone on speaker, cleaning things as you talk to me.
Well, you see how efficient it is, you see.
Isn't that exciting?
You get on hold with this program, and it's very efficient.
Very efficient.
Yes, you get so much done. Well, I'll keep you on hold longer if you like. No, no,
no, no, no, no, no.
I won't do that. I won't do that. So what can I do for you?
Well, here you go. I moved, and I have an upstairs, downstairs, and I have all kinds of complicated computer things going on. But the major thing I want to do is I have a networked PC, or I will very soon, have a networked PC downstairs.
Yes.
Which is close to the TV, etc. I want to watch video and play audio from, well, actually the play audio, skip that because I've already got that kind of going on. But I want to be able to watch video on my TV
upstairs
that comes out of my computer.
Right. So you mean it's next to your computer or it's actually remote from your computer?
If it's next to your computer,
it's easy because you just get a cable.
Sure. At this point, it looks like the PC is probably going to be probably 10 or 12 feet away.
Far, far away. Yeah, well, and really, this comes up more and more for people because we're downloading TV shows now.
Yeah.
And they're on the computer. The computer might be on another floor.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then wireless networking is going to be a big help. Are you Mac or PC?
PC.
Okay. Apple, as you probably know, in January is coming out with something called the iTV to do exactly this, but it does require that you store your video and music in iTunes.
Yeah.
So if you're
not an iTunes user.
You're not an iTunes user, you know, you're not going to go with a Mac solution. This really is, even though it works with Windows, I think it's a Mac solution.
Yeah.
There's another way that's a very PC way to do it, is the Xbox 360.
Well, I'm not a gamer.
All right, you see,
I'm
now
curious.
You're making it hard on me. You see, but that's one thing that Microsoft sees what Apple's doing and saying, "Whoa, look at this!" And the Xbox 360 is turning into that. You know, they have Xbox 360 connect with Windows Home Media Center, does exactly that on a wireless network. And now you're buying, using Xbox Live, you can buy TV shows and rent movies and then play them wirelessly over the network. And I have to say, an 802.11b network is not going to be fast enough to do this. You're going to want a G network. And even a G network, unless it's got good connectivity, it's going to be hard to play anything but standard definition television. I'm sure there's got to be somebody doing this for video for the Windows site. Let me look and see. I got two assignments now. I'm going to get a Windows iTunes duplicate eliminator, and I'm going to find you something that'll play video over your network for Windows. It's not an Xbox 360. I've got my work cut out for me. Tell you what, let's take a break and I'll come back. Maybe I'll have some answers. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 11:59. Courtney Kramer's in the KFI News Center.
November 26th, 2006.
KFI is a talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks at 12:06. I'm Courtney Kramer, KFI News.
Thank you, Courtney. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, KFI, 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number, 1-800-520-1534. A little search on the internet has shown up a number of programs that eliminate dupes in iTunes on Windows. As I said, there's a lot of stuff that will do it on the Mac. Here's one called Dupe Eliminator. From Markelsoft, MarkelSoft.com. And that's exactly the idea. And they do a lot. It looks like they do a lot of different programs. There's a try before you buy, of course. And let me see how much this sucker costs. It is $29.95. So it depends on how badly you want to eliminate your dupes. Or if you had a friend, well, that's not going to work. I was going to say, if you had a friend on a Mac, you could move your whole library over to the Mac, have him do it, and then be honest with you, I just live with it. Now, if you had a good command line, it's a fairly easy thing to do. If you have a Unix-style command line, you know the file name, you know, you just want to eliminate everything that has a 1 in the file name or a 2 in the file name, you can do that fairly quickly and easily, and I've done that. But I don't think Windows batch, well, yeah, I suppose you could do it in Windows batch files. It'd be a little more painful. I mentioned that Microsoft has released something called PowerShell, definitely in response to Linux and OS X and the very powerful Unix-style command lines on those two operating systems. Windows has been really hobbled because, well, the whole point of Windows was getting away from the command line, right? Except that there are times when that command line is the best solution. It's the power tool. And anybody who uses OS X and is really serious about it learns how to do some things in the command line. And same thing with Linux. So Microsoft has been working on something codenamed Monad for some time. In fact, the first we heard of Monad was all the security problems. I think they've fixed those. They now have released PowerShell. That's the official name. And you can get it from Microsoft's website. It's absolutely free for Windows XP or Windows Server 2003. It works on, weirdly enough, Vista in RC2, but they haven't released the final version for Vista. I think this, if you're going to be a power Windows user, is the thing to learn. It is much more powerful than Batch. We're not talking bat files here. We're talking a very, very powerful tool. I haven't had a chance to really get into it yet, but I plan to. Because I do believe that a command line, knowing a command line is really, really useful. And this is an amazingly powerful command line, judging from just what I've read about it. Haven't really started playing with it, but it supports power gadgets. I mean, it supports all sorts of really interesting stuff. I think this is a significant improvement, frankly, in Windows. It's the kind of thing Microsoft avoided. There really was, you know, they had for a while the Windows scripting host, but nobody really did much with it. This could be a big change. I'll have to play with it for a while before I really can give you my feedback on it. But I'm very optimistic. I think in many ways Microsoft might have turned the corner. I'm getting a little bit, I have to confess, a little excited over Vista. I think they've solved a lot of security issues. I think there's going to be some very useful stuff coming out with Vista. So my next goal is really to get a Vista system running 64-bit reliably, all the drivers and everything working. Because that's the one that's really the safest version of Windows. And that's going to be quite a challenge. Now, our second assignment, of course, so there's the duplicate. The second assignment was, and I still have yet to find a good answer for this, and I think this is one a lot of people want to do now. This is the next big thing. I think in 2007, you're going to see an explosion in products that do this. Because increasingly, we are downloading video, whether it's from YouTube or via BitTorrent or buying them in iTunes or on the Xbox Marketplace, whatever. We're putting TV shows and movies on our computers, but our computers aren't near our TV sets. We might even have HD TV sets and high-quality video on the computer. We want to get the video on the computer to play on our TV. Now, that's what iTV, the Apple product, will do. Apple saw this as a market. And they're going to put out something like a $400, they haven't said it exactly, but something like a $400 unit that has component out, HDMI out, that'll plug into your high-def TV. It probably has 802.11n in it. That's the newest Wi-Fi standard that is much faster and has much longer range. It's fast enough to send HDTV. It's a little sketchy to do that with 802.11g. A, you might be able to do it with. G's probably not enough. N will be enough. So, in fact, we've noticed that in the latest Mac hardware, there have been N cards. The Wi-Fi cards, even though they're used in G mode, support N, the newest Wi-Fi standard. That standard has not yet been ratified. It's in a draft form right now, and there are some real significant technical issues with it. But presuming they get that working, and I think that's why ITV is not out yet, but if they get that working, if they get that standard ratified and it works well, I think you're going to see dozens and dozens of devices to do this. That's what we're waiting on right now. There are lots of ways to do it with audio. There's the Roku Labs does some great stuff. Prismic. But I don't know of a good way yet to do this for television, particularly for HDTV. Correct me if I'm wrong. Go to the show notes, leo.am. And I'm going to turn on the comments right now so you can put a comment in there. Forgot to do that. or you go to the chat room, irc.dslextreme.com, and tell us there. That's a really a good way to kind of give me some feedback. I watch those chat room comments scroll by as I'm doing the show, and so that's those guys are very valuable to me. irc.dslextreme.com. There are 122 people in there right now. Or call 800-520-1KFI. Jane in San Diego, KFI. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Jane.
Hi, Leo. I'll get right to my question. I'm a very beginner, and I want to get a laptop. I'm scared to death that I won't have the right security and all that kind of stuff on my computer, and I'm so beginner, if you said, well, do this, and this, I would have no idea. Is there a way that you can buy a laptop and get included in it all the right stuff, and somebody else puts it in, and is there a big difference between Toshiba and Dell?
I like Dell better now. Toshiba used to really be kind of the standard, but I have to say Toshiba's gone downhill in hardware quality. Unfortunately, okay, Dell's gone downhill, as everybody has in support.
That's what bothers me.
It's very dramatic, but you know what? I don't think there's anybody better. It's the problem is that in PCs, the prices have been shaved, the margins have been shaved so thin, they can't afford to give you good support anymore. That's where they cut back. Support's a very expensive thing. If you think about it, if you spend, you know, an hour on the line with a tech support guy, that's hundreds of dollars for them. That's their entire profit on that laptop. So they can't do that for free anymore. And, you know, that's what we've done by demanding cheaper and cheaper laptops.
Is there any place, now that you were on that question, but I do want you to get to the security.
I will do the security, don't worry. Oh, yeah.
Right. Is there any place that you know that you could just pay something, you know, not obviously, you know, a lot, but, you know, a normal fee and have somebody available when you're new?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's one of our advertisers, of course, Make It Work.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. Yes, I've heard you advertise them.
I think there are a lot of people who do this. I don't think that that's, you can pay extra for support. Okay. There's a lot of computer handholding companies. There's, you know, used to be TRW and a number of other companies who would do this. I think there are a lot of companies that do this if you look in the yellow pages. Security. This is, by the way, you've heard me say it before. I'm just going to say it again because I have to. That's why I tell people who are inexperienced not to buy Windows computers. The security situation is so awful right now in Windows that a Mac.
You're talking about the Mac.
Mac,
right?
Is a better choice. But,
you know, could I ask you, I'm glad you brought that up because I've listened to you and that's what I keep leaning towards. The only reason I was thinking of not doing Mac was because it just seems like they have that one little store. It's so hard to ask questions or get support. And say if I was in a business that then required computers, it's most likely not going to be a Mac, right?
No, okay. I think I can disabuse you of both those notions. First of all, there's a lot of Mac support. Now, there may not be Mac support in your community, and you know, if you're surrounded by a bunch of Windows users, maybe not.
Right.
One of the things I often ask people is, well, if you're not an expert, who's your local expert that you're going to go to? Is it a family member, a neighbor, somebody at work? What are they expert in? Maybe it'd be a better idea to buy that thing that they're expert in. But on the other hand, that makes you dependent on them, right?
Right, and I don't like that.
You may not like that. And I'll tell you what, as an expert, as the guy people around me come to, I do not want to see. Somebody comes at me with a Windows machine infected with spyware, I hide. I run away. I don't want to talk to them because I know that we're talking hours and hours of my day wasted. It's a almost intractable problem. And if you're an inexpert user and you don't know what to do exactly, it's hard not to get spyware. Now, I have to say, I'm encouraged, as I said just a second ago, that Microsoft may have turned the corner on this, but it's not going to be a corner that's turned for you until January 30th when you can buy a Vista laptop and maybe put Windows One Care on it. And the jury's still out. But I'm starting to get a good feeling about it that Microsoft may have done what they needed to do. But not now, but Windows XP, no way.
Get me to the opinion of how I could buy a Mac.
Let me put you on hold. We need to take a break. I'm going to come back to you. Don't go away. And I'll talk a little bit about the Mac myths. There are definitely reasons to buy a Windows computer. There are lots of them. I'm not saying don't buy a Windows computer, but there are some Mac myths that we can dispose of here. If they're stopping you, then there's no reason not to get a Mac. We'll talk about it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1218.
Desiree.
When the big stories break,
buying you a large screen TV,
Fox News.
KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Man, there's something going on in the control room there. I don't know. Desiree, the call screener, is buying Chris, the board op, a flat screen TV for Christmas. Well, you two must really get along. That's a very nice gift. I think Desiree's getting it for somebody else, but doesn't want to say on the radio. Shall we say that? And there's some great choices, really. It comes down to budget. I mean, you're even seeing now flat screen HD TVs for under $1,000. It depends, of course, on the size. And there are two, if you want flat screen, there are really two technologies you're looking at, LCD or plasma. If you're willing to have something a little thicker, a little fatter, then you might be willing to look at a rear projection. I really like the DLP rear projection screens. Samsung makes my favorite. And you get more bang for your buck, bigger screen for less money. And if you really don't mind a tubby little TV, a CRT, like the old style glass TVs, actually give you, in many ways, the best HD TV picture. They're kind of the gold standard. The problem is, and they're cheap because nobody wants them. The problem is they're not quite as big, of course. I don't know what the biggest CRT is, but they're not 60 inches. And they're huge in the rear. Yeah. They pack much rear. And a lot of people don't have the room for them, frankly. That's what happened. As screens got bigger and bigger and bigger, so did the backs of the TV. Even if you like big butts, you may not like a big CRT in your living room. So that's why the real push towards these flat screens. Now, they're expensive. The LCDs are more expensive per square inch than the plasmas. I think the plasmas, I have actually recommended against plasmas for a long time. The first few generations of plasmas had some real problems. There were big burn-in problems. If you leave an image on that screen for very long, which happens a lot if you play video games on it, or even if you just watch MTV all day, that little MTV logo is going to get burned in on the screen. No matter what you're looking at, it stays. That's ugly. When you spend, in those days, $10,000 on a plasma, that's bad news. The other problem with plasmas is the gas. Plasmas are a charged cell of gas. The gas was leaking out slowly, very slowly, out of those cells. And what that meant was the screen would get washed out or darker. And so after a few years, and you can see this, if you look at older plasmas, just a few years old, they look awful. The colors are washed out or they're dim. They just don't look good. Plasmas look great when you first get them home, but they seem to be, well, not wearing very well. And when you spend thousands of dollars on a TV, you expect to have it for at least 5 or 10 years before you get a new one. Maybe not nowadays. I don't know. So for a long time, I recommended the LCDs. In fact, true to my word, I bought a Sharp Aquos. I think it was a 27-inch. And it's a great little HD TV. It's thin. I got mine for, I think, $1,400. It was a open box demo unit. But we're talking around, between $1,000 and $2,000. That seems like a lot for a TV, but that's what people are paying these days. I have to say, though, I did just spring for a plasma. I may be coming back to you in a year saying it was a mistake. I'm hoping it's not. I'm believing what they're saying. We're now in the seventh generation of plasmas. And I'm believing what they're saying, that we fixed these problems. We believe the technology's improved, and you would expect that. Prices have dropped dramatically. I bought a Pioneer. I think Pioneer does make the best plasmas. If you've got money to burn, if you're George Clooney, you're going to get the Elite $10,000. If you're anybody else like me, you're going to look at maybe the 5070. That's what I got, a 50-inch plasma. And I have to say the prices have dropped a lot. A street price under $3,000 now if you shop around. List is more like $5,000. But that's, that's a lot less than they used to be for 50 inches, which is huge. So what you don't say, Desiree, is what your budget is. But I have a feeling it ain't $3,000. Most of us aren't going to spend that much on a TV. But if you're willing, if you like your hubby that much, Chris, that much, then that would be my recommendation, would be the Pioneer Plasma, the 5070, which is the latest 50 inch, is very nice. And LCDs, I really like the Sharp Aquos, and they're more affordable. They're smaller. And if you don't have a big room, smaller is fine. There are lots of good choices, though. This is a good time to be buying TVs. The prices have fallen considerably. And yes, there are sub-$1,000 plasmas. A brand I like a lot that you'll see in the warehouse stores, Vizio. I think it's V-I-Z-I-O. Very affordable, very good looking plasmas. I highly recommend those. In fact, I think for most people, that's probably where you want to go. Is take a look at a Vizio. And then you just choose the size that you can afford. I think they do some really nice stuff. 1229, good luck. Happy shopping. 1229, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Right now, Courtney Kramer's in the KFI News Center.
It's for your own good, Dr. Laura, tomorrow, noon to 3.
KFI AM 640.
1237. KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. They're begging me in the chat room to make a fool of myself, and I'm not going to do it. Singing Christmas carols or something like that. You see, I was talking at the beginning of the show about how these things, you know, everything you do nowadays is recorded and visible for all, and this is exactly what they're trying to get me to do. Do something I will regret. 1-800-5, not that I have in any way hesitated in the past. 1-800-520-1KFI. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Neil's in Costa Mesa. Hello, Neil. Welcome to KFI.
Hello, Leo.
What can I do for you today, sir?
I'm calling about my invalid computer.
Oh, no. Oh, no. What can we do to help?
It's in deep guacamole. It's rebooting continuously. It just started. In fact, apparently, we were gone during Thanksgiving, and it was rebooting the whole time.
Oh, no.
Starting, restarting.
At what point does it restart in the boot process?
Yeah. Yesterday, I was watching it, and it actually got up to the Windows splash screen where the little bubble goes across the bottom.
Yeah.
But then now, I actually unplugged it, and this morning replugged it in, and it's rebooting as soon as you see the little Award BIOS.
Okay.
And
it's rebooting at delete. That point.
I tried actually hitting the delete, and it would get into the delete, the BIOS screen.
Yeah.
And it would just reboot anyway. It wouldn't let me.
Okay. So that's good. That's actually very useful. You know, in the past, when people call with this problem, there is a virus, Sasser, that will do this. But only once you get into Windows. What happens is you get into Windows, and about 30 seconds later, it reboots. So the fact that it's rebooting before Windows is even launching. It's rebooting, I mean, when you're in the BIOS, means it's not a virus. It's not a Windows problem. It's a hardware problem, very simply.
Right.
It is something severely wrong with either, I would suspect, your power supply. Do you have consistent power in your house? It doesn't go up and down a lot?
As far as I know, yeah.
Yeah. Because that could be an issue, but it is not likely. It's much more likely that you have a bad power supply. It's something that you cannot fix, probably, unless you're pretty handy. Did you build it yourself?
No, but I can get in there and put it in the power supply.
Yeah, replacing the power supply is just a few screws. You don't want to ever open the power supply. There are capacitors in there, and you can be shocked even if it's not plugged in.
Right.
So don't ever open it. But you can remove it very safely and put a new one in. I recommend
PC Power. That reminds me of a story. My father used to, he was in the radio corps in Korea or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And he'd work on our TV. And the first thing he did when he opened the back was take a big screwdriver and ground
discharge
out the capacitor
it.
And the huge sparks would come out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. You never forget that, seeing that. And I'll tell you
I understand.
TV techs know to do that because that's where that tube is a big capacitor, basically. It holds a huge charge. TV techs know how to do that. But boy, I'll tell you, people open TVs and they can get severely hurt. They can get thrown across the room. That's a lot of voltage in there.
Right.
So it's somewhat similar, although not quite as bad in your power supply. So don't.
You don't
open
think
it.
It's the motherboard itself?
Well, it's hard to tell. That's the problem when it's something like this.
I guess what's the likelihood? What's the top three likely things?
Power supply would be the first thing I would suspect. It could be an overheating problem as well. If the chip gets hot, in other words, if for some reason the cooling has stopped on the chip. Or the fan has died in the power supply, but most likely, if the cooling has died in the chip, for instance, if the heat sink's not making contact anymore, or if the fan on the chip has died, then the chip, when the chip gets to a certain temperature, and this happens within seconds, it'll halt. Now, usually that's not a reboot. Usually that's just a freeze, a stop. It'll go dark. Right. But it could, I could see how it might reboot in some circumstances. So that could be also the issue. It could be a bad motherboard. That's a very tough thing to diagnose because it's a motherboard's a hideously complex piece of equipment. I mean, so many things could be wrong. But the first thing I would suspect absolutely is a power supply. But, you know, if you open it up, look inside, make sure when you power it up, you know, you can't open the side. It's a tower case.
Yeah.
It's not a laptop.
No.
No. It's a tower case. Open the side and power up. Make sure all the fans are turning, that they're unobscured, that there's not a, you know, eight-inch thick layer of dust on everything. Yeah. Just eliminate any overheating, obvious overheating issues. Cabling can do it. I mean, I've seen this happen with so many different reasons. It's essentially, you know, the fact that the power on self-test is surviving, because that's, it won't go into BIOS unless the post succeeds, means that there's not, it's not like your RAM is falling out or you know, your video card has died. It means that there's something that is happening after a while. Not a long while, but a while.
It would happen, I think, yesterday when I was doing it, it would actually get to that Windows splash screen. Now it just barely starts.
Yeah, it sounds like
flashes the BIOS screen and then restarts.
Right. You know you're getting through post. Yeah, well, let's see, it's heating or a power supply dying. You're getting through post. If the thing is, it doesn't hit the hard drive. If you can get into system setup, BIOS setup, it's not hit the hard drive yet. If it fails there, it is nothing on your hard drive. It's not a software issue at all. It's absolutely a hardware issue. But how do we find out what the hardware issue is? Well, it's, you know, and that honestly, even if you take it to a shop nowadays, it's almost not worth the cost for somebody to sit there with a voltmeter and figure out what's going wrong.
Correct.
So a power supply is $40 or $50. I would first open it up, look at it, inspect it for obvious problems, make sure everything's fine. Looks, it's just like with a car. You open it up, you look at the engine, make sure everything's connected.
Right.
And then we're going to kind of try to figure out which component's failing. It's easy to replace a power supply. It's a little more complicated if it's the motherboard. I would really look at the chip. In fact, you might want to, if you're comfortable doing this, it sounds like you are, actually remove the heat sink. Make sure the fan's turning on the chip if it has a fan. Remove the heat sink. Make sure that the thermal grease is still doing its job. You know, it's making contact. That could be it, too. Although, as I said, usually if the chip overheats, it's a stop, not a reboot. Good luck. Cody, New York, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Hey, Cody.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know I'm a humongous fan. I've subscribed to about, let's say, 6 of your podcasts.
Well, you're not doing your job. You know, there's more. You got to subscribe to more.
Yeah, well, I'm only a Windows user.
6 is fine, please. Don't overdo it. Don't hurt yourself. You could literally listen, I think, 20 hours a week now. Can you believe this? Okay. Am I insane? What's going on? I don't know what's going on.
I've tried to do one myself. I can't put myself to the time or the effort to
it's
do
a lot
what
of work,
do.
But I love it. See, that's the thing. You do what you love, and it's easy. Do what you love. It's not work. It's play. I'm very lucky. I'm very lucky. I get paid to play. So what can I do to help you here?
I did buy a Dell laptop over the weekend based on your Leo's picks.
Have you got it yet?
No, it's coming.
It's exciting.
A week from tomorrow.
Congratulations. Which one did you get?
The E1505.
Yeah, that's a nice system. A very affordable, nice system.
Yeah, and I customized it with the Core 2 instead of the...
Good man.
Now, it comes with a free Express upgrade to Windows Vista, and I'm actually running Windows Vista dual boot on my home machine now.
Okay.
And I'm running the Ultimate because that's what you get with the beta test in RC2, and I want to get Ultimate when I get the upgrade. Is there any way for me to get from
so
Home Premium to Ultimate?
Here's what will happen. So you get cross-graded with the Express upgrade. So there's a standard upgrade. You said you have Home Basic?
No, it's giving me Home Premium.
Home Premium,
on the
good,
upgrade.
All right. So you'll get, exactly. So that means you got XP Home.
I got XP Media Center.
Media Center, that's right. Okay, so Home Premium is effectively the Media Center. So, and by the way, that's going to be the kind of default. As soon as you boot into it, you know this probably from your RC too. As soon as you boot into it, you have the option to upgrade to Ultimate, but you have to pay. You don't get a free upgrade to Ultimate. You only get a free cross grade.
Do you know how much it's going to be? Because, I mean, I'm listening to your Windows Weekly, and you're telling me $500.
No. That's if you bought it. No, it won't be that much. That's if you bought it. If you went to the store and bought it. I think it's like $100.
Oh, that's not terrible.
No, it's not awful. I can't remember what the upgrade from Home Premium to Ultimate, but, you know, almost everybody's going to want to do this.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want the Ultimate. I'm a big Windows enthusiast.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd be able to deal without it.
I am not sure I should. Let's see. The Vista Upgrade Matrix. Here we go. Microsoft loves those tables.
Oh, yeah. their site is the worst.
Yeah, it doesn't say any price here. I don't know if they've announced pricing. Maybe they haven't. I see the upgrades, but I don't see what the pricing is yet. So maybe I may be looking at the wrong part of the Microsoft site. I'll keep looking.
I would not be surprised.
Vista upgrade pricing announced. Let's see here. Vista Home Premium upgrade, $299. Vista, but see, this is the upgrade. This is different. You've already paid for a lot of the upgrade because you have the Express upgrade coupon. I'm guessing it's not going to be more than $100. It will not be $500.
Okay.
Because you have this coupon. That's the key. That's the big bulk of the price is already taken care of by the coupon. And by the way, I should tell people that in most cases, when you buy a computer now, you will get a Windows Vista Express upgrade coupon, and the price will vary from nothing as you got, which is great, to $20. It's going to be a small amount of money, and it isn't available on all systems. But you absolutely, if you're buying a Windows XP system between now and January 30th, you really should find one with that coupon. I will find out for you. I don't know what the upgrade. They may not even have announced that, but I will find out for you.
Could I ask you another question?
Of course, because you're a humongous fan.
How's the battery life on these Core 2 laptop chips, the Merom?
It's surprisingly good. It should be given the amount of, you know, you've got a huge power jump, right, from your Pentium 4 or your older computer.
Yeah.
And so my experience has been the battery life is roughly the same, which means better battery life in the sense that you're getting a lot more, it's a lot more power. These are very efficient chips. Now, if you had a Pentium M, you might see a dip in battery life. Did you have an M? Was that your last laptop?
No, this is my first laptop. My desktop is running a Pentium 4 right now.
I don't know what Dell's claiming. What is it, 3 or 4 hours?
They said like two and a half to four.
Yeah. And did you get the big battery or the little battery?
I got the little battery to start off.
So you get the bigger battery, you get more battery life. I think that 2.5 is about right, 2.5 to 3. It's funny. It seems to be a constant. Battery life is a constant. We get more power, but we don't get more battery life. And these are very efficient chips. They're the most efficient laptop chips, but they're also very powerful. You've got basically two processors in there.
Yeah, I know. I went into stores on Black Friday, and they're selling the AMDs, and it's just a class ahead now.
Get the Core 2. You know what you're talking about, Cody. You absolutely did the right thing. You're going to love it. Would you call me back when you get it and then give us a review?
Oh, sure.
I'd love that.
Thanks a lot,
Leo. All right, Cody. Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. KFI, I'll see if I can find some pricing. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Download your favorite shows and listen when you want. KFI AM 640.com.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI. You know, I started talking a little bit about flat panels at the beginning of this hour, and what I didn't talk about is 1080p. And I will talk about that in the next hour or so, because I think that is a big issue. And I'm reading a lot of stuff about it that is actually contrary to what I had thought and recommended for some time about 1080p screens. So we'll talk about that. There is some new information. Gary in South Pasadena, welcome to KFI. Hey, Gary.
Hello, Gary.
Gary, are you there? All right, put you on hold. Gonna put you on hold, and if you hear me and you're running back from the bathroom, I'll get you next. Scott in Spokane, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Scott?
Oh, pretty good. I'm just trying to beat this wintery snow we're having.
Are you having snow in Spokane?
Oh, yes. I'll send something your way.
Thank you. No. You know, I was just looking. We're going to start doing a call for help, the TV show I do. We're going to start shooting it in Vancouver. And so I was just checking the Vancouver weather. It's snowing there, too. What's going on?
Well, I have a question about trying to get my Linksys router to hook up to my iBook, but wirelessly, but securely. I'm having some problems with trying to get it all set up.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be an issue. Wi-Fi is Wi-Fi, so, you know, despite what Apple might tell you, you don't need to buy an airport to use with a Mac. In fact, I don't recommend it. Apple overcharges for those airports. Same hardware inside. You just get the flying saucer look, you know.
Because I got it to work out of the box. And
yeah, out of the box it works because it doesn't have any security on it.
Yeah, I don't want to be able to do that way. So,
so what you want to do is turn on WPA, not WEP.
WPA.
WEP has been cracked. It's not secure. It takes about 20 minutes. Somebody sitting on your curb will figure it out.
Yeah.
So a WPA is still secure. Now, the nice thing about WPA, it's pretty straightforward. It's just a password.
Oh, okay, it is.
Yeah. So it should be very straightforward. You just turn on WPA in your router. It'll, you know, you'll have to give it a password, of course.
Right.
Make a note of what that password is. It could be plain English passphrase. It doesn't have to be a hex or anything like that.
Okay.
And then in your Mac, when you try to join that router, it'll say, oh, I see, this is a WPA encrypted router. What's the password?
Okay. I tried doing that once, and I totally locked up my Mac, and I was like, Greg, I got a big mess here.
It may be there was a crash or something else bad going on, but I do that all the time. What model iBook is it?
It's a 12-inch.
Recent?
G4.
Okay. Yeah, it supports W. It's not one of the color ones, is it? It's a white one, right?
It's the newer model.
Yeah, it supports WPA. What did Apple say?
Nothing. They just told me how I can reset everything so I get back on my laptop.
I think that was just a standard crash. It was just a crash. And it doesn't have anything to do with the WPA. I use it all the time. It's the only way we'll get online as a WPA. Okay. I use an Apple router at home, but I use a D-Link here at the office, and it works just fine. You set it up as normal, and you know, you surf to the Linksys router 192.168.1.1. You turn on WPA, give it a password. Use WPA PSK if it gives you the choice. And there's several different WPA, Windows Protected Access settings. There's pre-shared key is the one you want. That means we pre-share the password with one another, or with yourself in this case. Hey, Scott, the password is, and then you tell yourself the password. That's pre-shared, and that's what you want. I think it was just a quinky dink. The crash might have had something to do with something else, or maybe been a bad driver. Make sure you've updated your Mac. You've got the latest drivers. The latest airport drivers for your card, and it should work just fine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio, 1259. Courtney Kramer's in the KFI News Center.
November 26th, 2006.
KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 106, I'm Courtney Kramer, KFI News.
Thank you, Courtney. 106, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI, 1-800-520-1KFI, 1-800-520-1537. Did I say that? 1-5, is that right? 1-8, I don't know. 1-800-520-1KFI. I have to look on the phone pad. Isn't that funny? I just don't know the numbers. I don't think it's set. 1-800-520-1534. That's it. You'd think I know. Hey, I apologize. I completely forgot after the last break to talk about Mac myths. Oh, that was dumb of me. So we were talking to a caller who wanted to buy a laptop, and she was concerned about security, understandably. So I'm going to do two things. I'm going to tell you about why a Mac is a good choice. For some, not perfect for everybody, and how to protect, if you do get a Windows laptop, what you should do to protect it. The truth is, right now, Windows XP, it's a scary thing. If you are not an expert user or you're not willing to learn how to protect it, you're going to get spyware. You're going to get viruses. You're going to get problems. I mean, just that's a fact. And while Microsoft has done a good job, I think, of patching Windows XP, it's just still full of holes. I'm hoping Vista will be better. I have every indication Vista will be better. But we won't really know until it's out in the wild January 30th and lots of people are using it. And expect in the first few months of Vista, January, February, March, April, to see lots of fixes and lots of exploits and lots of security issues. The Mac right now, right, I say right now, is not A, not a target. It's too small of a market share. And B, more secure inherently because it's based on Unix and it's fairly well secured. It's just less prone. There is no spyware. There are no viruses in the wild for OS X. You're safe. It's been that way for a few years now. So for a lot of people, if you don't want to become a security expert, I think a Mac laptop's a good choice. Comes with a lot of the software you need. The price seems a little higher, but you do get more generally. I think they're just, you know, the MacBook or the MacBook Pro is a really excellent choice. Now, here are the Mac myths. She said, well, I'm not going to get support. That's not true. There are lots of independent Mac dealers who will support you. And, of course, there's Apple stores all over. The Apple stores offer very good support. And Apple, just like every other company, has phone tech support. That's actually pretty good. If you buy AppleCare, which is normally I don't recommend extended warranties, but in this case, it's probably a good idea. The AppleCare will give you really good tech support. You get better tech support with AppleCare. So that's a case where, you know, the reason companies don't do good tech support is it costs them a lot of money. And with the razor-thin margins on hardware these days, they can't afford to give you good tech support for free. But in this case, you pay Apple a few hundred bucks extra for 3 years, and you'll get good tech support. So there's good support for Macs. You probably won't need it as much, but it does exist. The only reason to avoid a Mac is if there's some Windows stuff you have to run. And even then, nowadays, you can run Windows on a Mac pretty darn well. You can either boot into it using Apple's Boot Camp, or you can run Parallels, which is a $79 program, allows you to run Windows on your Mac. That's what I do. So if there's a Windows program you have to have, it'll run on your Mac as a Windows program. However, you probably, you know, most of the stuff people use, Microsoft Office as an example, runs, you know, there's a Mac version of that. Now, if you spend a lot of money on Windows software, you bought Office, you bought Photoshop, you bought a lot of the hardware, Adobe Premiere Elements. I mean, you've spent a lot of money on it. Maybe you're not going to want to get a Mac just because you don't want to, you know, buy more software. And that's reasonable. If you have to use Office, you know, it's a couple hundred bucks you're going to have to spend. But I think for a lot of people, for home users particularly, novice users, a Mac is a better choice. If you're going to buy a Windows laptop, it will come with an antivirus. It will come with anti-spyware. It may not be the best of breed. In fact, it probably isn't. Usually isn't. And usually is a six-month trial subscription, so you're going to replace it anyway. I think for the novice user, for the pro, for somebody who knows what they're doing, I love, as you know, Nod32. It's a great antivirus. For the novice user, you know, I think ultimately Vista with Windows One Care installed will be a good choice. Vista is going to come with Microsoft Defender free, their anti-spyware software. Vista has some good protections in place to keep spyware from infecting. I think we're going to see a real improvement in security with Vista. So certainly if you buy a computer now, you should make sure you get that Vista upgrade coupon. And you should plan on upgrading to Vista, maybe not January 30th, but maybe in February, late February, maybe late March, once the major bugs have been worked out. I think Vista will be secure. I think XP, you got to learn what, you know, the basics of security. You don't open attachments ever in your email. You don't open those files that get sent to you. That's where viruses come in. You don't click on links in email. That's where you get phished, viruses, and spyware. You don't download music from peer-to-peer music sharing sites. You're very careful about what you download in general. You're very careful about what sites you visit in general. You do have a good antivirus, an anti-spyware. But I'll be honest with you, antivirus and anti-spyware nowadays may not be enough. It's behavioral changes. You've got to protect yourself by changing how you act on the net. By staying away from bad sites, by not opening attachments, not clicking links in email, backing up regularly. Make sure you do Windows Update, you know, every month, on the second Tuesday of the month. When there's those updates, you make sure you install them. Because in Windows, this doesn't happen on the Mac. Apple also does updates, but you don't see these zero-day exploits like you do on Windows. On Windows, the day Microsoft releases these patches, hackers have already backwards you know, reverse engineered them, figured out what they fix, and put out exploits to take advantage of those holes, knowing that not everybody applies the patches. You've got to apply those patches right away. You don't have any choice. Dave in Valencia, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Leo. It's great to talk to you. I've been a longtime fan going back to the screensaver days.
Thank you. That's great.
I actually have a Vizio 42-inch LCD TV.
How do you like it?
I like it. And comparing it to the plasma at the store, it looked much superior.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only about $1,300 as opposed to about $1,000 for the plasma.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is, why I'm on Dish Network for my broadcast. On standard, I don't have HD yet.
Mm-hmm.
Why does it look so bad compared to a standard TV?
Because it's not as blurry. It's too accurate.
Is that what it is?
Well, it could be that you've got settings wrong. You know, you got to make sure that when you set the display properly, you're not mm-hmm. stretching it across the display, but you're using the black bars on either side and so forth.
They are.
Yeah. Then if it's the right resolution, if it's this 4:3 aspect ratio and it's the right resolution, what you're seeing is what you're getting. And the problem is on an old TV, they smear, it's smeared.
Okay.
It's blurry, so you don't see how crappy a standard definition television signal is.
But this has been look fine on it.
Yeah, well, that's good. That means your TV's fine.
Okay.
This is the problem, unfortunately, is you now have a very high-quality monitor, and you're looking at high-quality source. The DVD is 480p. It's progressive scan. You may have it, if I were you, I'd get an upsampling DVD player that gets it up to 720p. That'll look even better. Once you get your Dish HD, you'll see what HD looks like.
Okay.
But the problem is you're not going to want to go back to standard television.
I know. There's not that much program that I like on HD yet. So I haven't done it yet.
Well, all the broadcast is now HD. If you can get a broadcast signal in Valencia, you should be able to watch that. Yeah, that's too bad.
Is it worth upgrading to a DVD player that has HDMI on it? Is there going to be a noticeable difference?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, is an upsampling or upconverting DVD player. I use a Samsung. It's about $150.
Mm-hmm.
What it does, it takes that... DVDs are recorded in enhanced definition, or 480p. So here's the standards. There's progressive and interlaced. Your standard television set is interlaced. It draws half the lines, goes back, draws the other half the lines.
Mm-hmm.
And the standard TV is roughly 400 lines of resolution. An enhanced screen is 480 lines of progressive, which means it draws each line individually. It's 480 lines from top to bottom. It's like, it's hard to describe, but it's kind of more like your computer monitor. It's progressive as your computer monitor is. So it's crisper and it's a nice display. High def is 720p. 720 lines from top to bottom, or 1080i. Your Vizio is capable of 720p or 1080i, interlaced 1080 or 720p top to bottom. What is the native? Now, always with an LCD, you have to ask, what is the native resolution of the monitor, the actual dots? Do you know?
I don't. I'd have to look it up. But it's not as high as a computer monitor. I noticed that.
Yeah, no, it won't be. All it needs to be is 720 from top to bottom. So it'll probably be something like 1650 by 720.
I think it was.
Yeah, it'll be something like that. That's good. That means you can do 720p, you know, without any jaggies, nicely. And now that brings up what I was about to talk about, which is this 1080p. A lot of people are saying, oh, no, we got to go for the 1080p. That's the highest resolution. That means 1,080 lines of resolution from top to bottom. But I have read a number of articles now where it is virtually indistinguishable between 1080i and 1080p. The high price you pay for a 1080p monitor is not worth it. You did the right thing by getting a 720p monitor.
Yeah, and the price was right. It was $1,300.
Yeah, Vizio is very aggressive, and I think Dude does very good stuff.
Yeah.
But this is something people are running into. They're starting to see how bad, I Love Lucy wasn't so good.
Exactly. So basically, it's such a high... In essence, give an analogy of a high-quality speaker that's broadcasting all the static is what's happening.
Yeah, you're hearing now all the defects. You're seeing now all the defects.
All right.
Generally, you can't have it set wrong, and so you have to want to make sure that you've got all the settings properly.
I think they're right, because it looks so great on DVDs.
Yeah. Well, what happens is TV itself is going to sense what the signal is and is going to adjust, and so you want to make sure that it's choosing properly, that it's when it's got an NTSC signal, it's choosing the right resolution. It'll say in the manual what to do, but that can be an issue. It'll auto-sense I've got a DVD, I've got 480p. Now, by the way, those up-converting DVD players, they use processors to make it 720p, and it really does look better.
Well, now, that's my question also. Do all those DVD players, is it worth it for the HDMI
It's not the HDMI you're paying for. It's the upconverting you're paying for.
But do you need the HDMI? Is what I'm getting at.
Component is as good as HDMI. HDMI is
that cable's a lot of money.
Well, you can get cheaper cables.
Okay.
My Samsung $150 Samsung DVD player came with a cable.
Okay.
And now you can pay $150 for the cable alone.
I saw that. Yeah.
It ain't better. Don't.
Yeah. Okay.
Digital's digital. That's why HDMI might be better. You've got a digital screen, and you've got a digital output from your DVD, so you're going to have no conversion from digital to analog, so it will look better in that respect.
That's one thing I liked about this TV. It had two HDMI
That's a great feature,
yeah.
Because going forward, all high-def content will be HDMI.
I figured it, and I didn't want to get stuck. Yeah.
Yeah. The copy protection that they're using on high-definition video requires these new digital HDMI connectors.
Oh.
So you will not be able to, for instance, all the HD DVD players use HDMI. They have to.
Okay.
Well, and great. if you get the Dish HD box, you'll see it's HDMI.
I think I'm going to do that.
It's worth it.
How much that cost per month, roughly?
It's cheap. I think
cheap?
I can't remember. I used to pay for it. It's $5, $10. It's not much.
Oh, that cheap. Okay.
Yeah, look and see. I may be wrong, but boy, it's worth it. They do a nice job, I think. I think Dish has a very good HD signal. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio, 119 now.
Hug a tree if you listen. Rush Limbaugh, tomorrow, 9 to noon.
KFI, AM 640.
126, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I got just what you need. Geek Talk till 2, and then it's Dr. Dean Adell. Coming up on KFI. Peter San Clemente, welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo. How are you,
Peter.
Doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine. Hey, listen, I had a quick question I wanted to ask you. When I burn a CD, either a podcast or music, it will play on some of my machines, and it won't play on other ones. For instance, my new car, I have no problem, but my 2001 Acura won't do it. And then my Walkman will play it, and then our bedroom CD player won't.
That's right. That's because blank CDs don't record data the same way as your commercial pressed CDs. Pressed CDs actually have bumps and pits that the laser reads. The CDR isn't making bumps and pits. It actually uses dye to simulate dark and light patches. It's a lower luminance. So what happens is some CD players get confused by the lower luminance of the disc. They think they try to refocus. Eventually, they just give up. They say, I can't read this. It's usually older CD players. However, there may be a fix. I mean, sometimes trying different media works. What might be a good idea is to buy a couple of pieces of different kinds of media. You can do this online or go to your stores. Usually don't have the choice that an online media place would have. But try different manufacturers, Ritech, Memra, TDK, and some of them may work.
Okay.
And if you find one that works, then just continue using that one. It really comes down to the luminance of the CDR, and it's just confusing to older players.
Yeah, I've done a couple different fixes on. I mean, I've tried that. I've tried the Memorex, and I guess a couple other brands.
It may never work. I mean, if they're just were made before CDRs were commonplace, and they don't support them.
Yeah, I got you. Okay, could I have another question?
Sure.
I have Windows XP, and I've had to upload or reformat my hard drive about three times because I lose my Windows Update files, and I can't restore them. And after a while, I just go ahead and update, just reformat my hard drive.
What do you mean you can't restore?
Is there something that I can do to?
I'm not sure I understand. You say you lose your Windows Update. I don't.
Well, when you go to the support page and you ask to do the Windows Update, and then you go through it says Express or Custom,
right.
Or Regular or whatever, it goes through the format to find out what updates are available,
right.
and it does that. And then when you get to the end of that prompt, it will just basically tell you that that the files have been lost, and then it asks you if you want to reconfigure those files or to find them, and then and download them. And you do that. You press that button or that font, and it it starts to download those, or it wow. acts like it's downloading them, but it never does.
And that doesn't anyway, sound. I that does not sound upload. Good. I have to say that doesn't sound encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why that's happening, but
yeah,
I've
just reformatted the hard drive a couple of times, and it'll work for 3 or 4 months, and then I end up with the same problem when I go to. I'm not an automatic update; it's just on manual, so I have to do it, you know, on my own.
That's a little scary. I hate to hear that happening. It sounds like, I'll be honest with you, a virus or spyware is modifying your system. And it's happening again and again. Those should not be missing. The fact that it keeps happening sounds like something bad's happening to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 129. Courtney Cameron's in the KFI News Center.
He's the essence of more stimulating. Bill Handel, tomorrow morning, 5 to 9.
KFI AM 640.
137. KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI, talking high tech with Pat and Upland. Hello, Pat. Welcome to KFI.
Good afternoon, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
But of course.
I'm looking at portable GPS units,
okay.
And I'm considering a Garmin Nuvi.
I like those. Are you okay. Now, let me ask you how you want to use this guy. The Nuvi is for, it's kind of more for your car, but it mm-hmm. is portable. So it's you want a car GPS, right?
No, I want something portable, I believe.
That you carry in your hand?
Mm-hmm.
So are you going to use it in the car?
I'm going to use it in the car, certainly.
But most often you'll use it walking around?
Well, no, that doesn't. I know they you can play books on tape and you can...
Yeah, it's an MP3 player.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a good... The Garmin makes great stuff. The Nuvi's mm-hmm. good. It's not cheap, but it's... I'll tell you, the price has dropped so much that it's relatively
sure.
inexpensive.
What suggestions do you have?
I like that one. I just it's small, so it is portable. When you mean portable, you mean move it from car to car, or do you really just want to carry it around?
Maybe about half and half.
Okay, so you're thinking of it, though, as an MP3 player as well, or are you thinking of it as you'll use the GPS as you walk around?
Primarily GPS.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a very good choice. I mean, it's very small. It fits in the palm of your hand.
Mm-hmm.
I think Garmin is my favorite in terms of software.
Okay.
I do recommend the Garmins in general.
Okay.
And I haven't I have to, you know, disclaimer here, I haven't used the Nuvi.
Mm-hmm.
I've looked at it and I'm very impressed with it. And I think it's, it sounds like exactly what you want. It's got a lot of memory, which means you can, of course, put all your maps on there and still have room for books on tape or
sure.
MP3s and stuff like that. I think that's a nice choice, yeah.
And anything to compare as far as research on other units or?
Let me think of what else might be of interest to you in that space. Now, I think, you know, that's kind of a unique one. It's just mm-hmm. the only negative I would say is it's a little pricey
mm-hmm.
for that. You know, those you know, you're competing against devices at maybe $250, but not as good like the i2. I think this is a pretty good one. I mean, you know, you might the Street Pilot is probably bigger. It's cheaper, but it's bigger.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, you know, given what you've told me, what you're looking for, this is a very good choice.
Okay.
Go for it.
All right.
And because it does do audible books, you know, mm-hmm. that's I think that's a great solution. And that's very important. You can't buy something and play audible books on anything. You have to make sure it's audible compatible. And I believe this one is.
I believe you're right.
Yeah, so that's a good reason to get it.
Okay.
In fact, I think that might be the only one that's audible compatible. That's a nice feature. Now, remember, you're going to have to hook it up to your, you know, your car sound system. You're going to have to get a little adapter for that. But it has all of North America in it, I think, because it's got 700 megabytes of storage. I think that's actually a very good choice. I should probably get one for review and try it out, come to think of it. Mike in Ventura, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Mike.
I live in a condominium complex, and I have a garage, which has kind of my office sort of set up there. And what I'd like to do is actually get my Wi-Fi signal up to that garage. Is there a way that I can like extend the range
oh, yeah.
of my current Wi-Fi signal?
You bet. There's two ways. You can do it passively or actively. Passively would be get an antenna, a directional antenna in this case, and aim it at the garage. And that might be sufficient. It's certainly the cheapest and easiest way to do it. But frankly, it's also the least effective way. Is there a kind of midway? Is there a plug socket you could plug in a repeater?
When you say plug socket.
You know, is there somewhere you could put a second router? Because the best way to do this is something called WDS, which actually takes a second router and puts it in between the endpoint and your first router and repeats the signal along. But to do that, you'd have to, it may be, if it's just outside, then that's not going to work. But if it's, but if you can get, for instance, you know, closer to the garage, you know, at a mud, you know, a mud room or somewhere, and plug in a router there, that would be the best way to do it. How far is the garage from the far, the, how far is it from the closest point at the house?
About 250 feet.
Ooh, it's a long way off.
Maybe a little less.
Okay. Probably then your best bet is to get an N router. Now you're gonna have to get all new hardware for this, but get it. But the 802.11n will go that distance. Where is the where in the house is the base station now? Is it near?
Smack dab in the middle. It's
in
like
the
right
middle.
Next to my TV.
Okay, so it may be 300 feet away or 350 feet away.
Yeah, it's probably actually when I think about it, it's probably less. It's probably maybe about 100 feet, something like that.
100 feet is kind of the nominal. 150 feet is kind of the nominal distance for B. But it gets really sketch after about 100. Yeah.
Somebody right above me has an Apple AirPort.
You see that one?
And I can see it, yeah.
Yeah. Which is funny because it's probably the same distance, isn't it?
Yeah.
Some of this has to do with what's in between you and the router. Metal, mm-hmm. The worst thing is a metal screen. But a metal in the wall, that's going to make it harder. Concrete's going to make it harder. Wood is pretty good. If you can position your internal router, your indoor router, near a window that doesn't
closer,
have a screen
yeah.
or closer, that will help. But truthfully, I think for long throw, if you don't have the ability to put a router in between, that's what I do. I have one downstairs, and then I have kind of a WDS, a second router, kind of midway, and then one upstairs. But if you can't do that, and it doesn't sound like you can because it's outdoors, then I was just getting an 802.11n router. Belkin is a good one. But that means you need to get all new equipment, right? You need to get new cards for the laptops, new adapters for the PC, and so forth. Have you bought anything yet?
No, not at all.
Good.
You first, man.
This is it. This is before you buy anything. Perfect. Get Belkin and equipment.
Okay.
And that will get the whole distance. No problem.
All right, Leo. Thanks.
You're welcome, and you'll get good speed on that. I was talking earlier about it, and is still in draft. It hasn't been approved yet. The IETF, the Internet, is it the IETF or IEEE? Maybe it's the IEEE. It's either the Internet Engineering Task Force, I think it might be the IETF, has to approve the spec and say, yes, this is the spec, and then it will be final. But right now, it's in the middle stage. It was originally pre-N. Now it's in draft form, and then it will get approved. It should be approved early next year. However, I think almost all of the draft versions will be upgradable. If you haven't bought any equipment yet, that's definitely the way to go. We tried it in the TV studio between floors. It was probably 400, 500 feet through metal floors, and it worked great. Really is, it's an excellent solution. Great way to go. 1-800-520-1KFI, Mobix in Stafford, Virginia. Sorry I hung up on you, dude. Welcome to KFI.
I'm here.
You're here now.
How's it going, Leo?
You had your mute button on.
I did. I'm sorry.
No problem.
So I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
I have a cell phone, a Razer, a V3, and I put it or get in the room where one of my computers are, and it resets it whenever it gets a phone call or a text message.
Resets the computer?
Restarts completely.
The computer goes, it reboots the minute the phone rings?
Yes, sir.
Son of a gun. That's one sensitive. That's one sensitive computer.
Yes, it is.
That would happen. That makes no sense at all.
I've tried swapping out parts, and it's just this one computer. I don't know what it is.
The phone's just sitting there. How close is it to the computer?
Well, it can be anywhere in the room.
Anywhere in the room.
14 by 14.
As soon as it rings, the computer resets. That is just bizarre. Now, who's your carrier?
Singular.
Okay, that makes sense. It's a GSM phone. You know, right. You're laughing at me. You don't believe me. You don't trust me. But GSM, you've probably heard it. In fact, I'm going to hold my phone up. And maybe if I could send a message or something. The GSM puts out a pretty nasty signal, and you'll hear it on a lot of electronic gear when it's sending and receiving.
Right. And I've heard it on the radio.
Yeah, it goes brr, brr, brr.
Yeah.
All I can think, and it's the only possible explanation, is there is a crystal or something in your computer that is on that frequency or is sensitive to that frequency, that the minute it gets that burst, and it's not very many watts, it's a tenth of a watt or something, but it's enough to throw that crystal for a loop, and it's rebooting your system. What I would suggest is shielding that computer. Wrap it in tinfoil. I mean, you need to isolate it from the radio frequency. It's the only thing I can think of. A GSM phone does put out quite a bit of noise. I mean, I don't have to have this phone. I turn them off when I do the radio show. I don't have to have it too close to the mic for you to hear that. We've all heard it now. Everybody hears it. And it's a very distinctive GSM sound. That's, you know, that's radio frequency. When you hear that, there is radio frequency, you know, coming out of that phone. It's not much. So it's got to be something tiny, very sensitive. That's bizarre. I have to say, I've never heard that one before. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 148.
The big story. KFI News is on it.
Fire burning in the San Bernardino National Forest near Yucaipa has been fully contained. Fire officials say it looks like the fire started when a lost hiker lit a campfire as a signal for help.
Malberg has been charged with molesting four boys when he was dean of an L.A. Catholic high school.
KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
High-speed internet is here at a price that I can't believe. I'm so proud of DSL Extreme. They're my internet service provider, and these guys have gone to the bat for people who are still stuck with dial-up or are paying more for DSL or high-speed internet than they ought to. DSL Extreme offers high-speed internet, the same kind I use, for $12.95 a month. Wow. Less than the price of a car wash for great high-speed internet. $12.95 a month. There's free spam protection. The modem is free. 24-hour-a-day free local tech support. There are no setup fees. There's no additional charges. It's $12.95 a month for the first year for new customers. Now, some restrictions apply to geographic. Call 866-2-GET-NET right now to get DSL Extreme. 866-2-GET-NET. You can also visit them online at dslextreme.com. If you're still on dial-up, if you're paying twice as much for AOL dial-up, what are you waiting for? Call 866-2-GET-NET. To get high-speed internet for $12.95 a month, only from DSL Extreme.
Handle on the news, warts and all, tomorrow morning, 6 to 7.
KFI AM 640.
153, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. See if we can get a couple more calls in here before I get out of here. It's Skedaddle for Dr. Dean Adele. Don't forget the show notes are online at leo.am. Chat room is irc.dslextreme.com, and it continues afterwards in a non-moderated form. So if you get in there and you move over to the other place, you can be there 24/7. You can hear my stuff on my podcast network at twit.tv, twit.tv on the web, and there's lots of podcasts covering all sorts of subjects all week long, including this show. Kirk in San Diego, welcome KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Kirk.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great.
Hey, I have a Windows XP Media Center PC, and my hard disk crashed a couple weeks ago.
Ooh.
And so I was able to put in a new hard drive and run my recovery CDs and get Windows back on there. And I was even able to recover the data off the old broken disk drive. And it turns out the boot sector was just corrupted beyond repair in the old disk.
Uh-huh.
And I have some encrypted files from my old data set that I wanted to get back.
Uh-oh.
And so I tried to
clone the
user ID.
No, it won't work. Did you use the Windows encryption?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And so unfortunately, you're out of luck.
So I can't, like, copy the Hive files from the registry back onto the new drive and try to recreate it?
There's a hidden certificate file that you didn't get. When you use Windows encryption, you must copy that certificate file along with the other files on your backup, or you will never be able to recover those files. This is, by the way, why I do not recommend the built-in Windows encryption. Too many people get bit by this.
Yeah. Okay.
You have no access to those files, and it's using strong encryption, so as far as I know, there's no way to crack it.
Okay, well, I'll stop trying then.
Sorry.
That's okay. Thanks, Leo.
Terrible news. In future, use TrueCrypt, TrueCrypt.org. TrueCrypt is free, open source. And by the way, that's the only kind of encryption I trust. Who knows what backdoors people put in their software. If it's open source, you know there's nothing in there, right? And the nice thing about TrueCrypt is it's passphrase-based. So you don't need to recover a certificate. In the process of encryption, there was an option to back up that certificate. Nobody ever does. And if you don't take the certificate along with your data, you can never open it again. Bob and Cerritos, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, Leo, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thanks,
anyway, I've got a Windows XP version that I just reloaded into my computer because my computer hard drive just crashed. And I put it in, put Service Pack 2 in.
Good.
Now I'm getting this system idle on the Windows Task Manager where it says it's 99%.
Yeah, you just ignore that.
Ignore that.
That's normal.
Oh, because I thought the thing was running and doing something else. And
yeah, what it's doing is it's idling. It's waiting for you. And the way all graphic operating systems work is in an idle loop. They wait for you to do something. So that loop is all that's going on. It's using all of your cycles.
Sounds good.
So you're fine. Yeah, it's a common question. People go, wait a minute, what's going on here? I got spyware. I got something going on. No. That's normal. It's the computer waiting for you, dude. That's mostly what computers do these days. Just sit there waiting for you. Waiting, waiting, waiting. Dr. Dean Adel is waiting for you. He would love for you to stick around and enjoy his fine program. I will be back next Saturday and Sunday. I am on 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. If you're in Canada or Australia, you may mock me for saying this, but there are people who listen to this show all over the world. If you're in Canada or Australia, you can catch my show Call for Help on G4 Tech TV Canada or the How To Network in Australia. Both channels are on most cable systems and the satellite systems as well. If you look in the bookstores, you'll see many of my books. I'm not doing any more books. This is it. This is the last year for those books. I probably will keep doing books, but I'll self-publish from now on. See, you know, I'm a big fan of doing it yourself, right? Eliminating the middleman. And, you give up so much money to a publisher, almost all the money to a publisher. And frankly, I don't know how much they do for you. I had a wonderful publisher. I'm not bad-mouthing him. But I'd like to try just doing it myself. Since most computer books especially are sold now online, I don't need to get in a bookstore. That's what a publisher does for you. They get you in the bookstore. I can't get myself in Borders, Barnes & Noble. But I can get myself on Amazon. And since most computer books are bought on Amazon, that's the place. Bought. Did I say bought on Amazon? I think I did. That's another reason I'm not going to write anymore. I don't know how to speak English. So I think we're going to do a podcasting book, and it'll be available for later, in the next 6 months or so. But this is the last of the line on the almanacs and all those books. You can catch my podcast, as I mentioned, on twit.tv. There's lots of them. There's a new Vista podcast, if you're interested in Vista, with Paul Theroux of the Wind Supersite. Great guy, great knowledge, really knows his stuff. Steve Gibson, you've heard both on this show a couple weeks ago, is my security guy. We do a Mac show called Mac Break Weekly, a Mac video show called Mac Break. We cover the net with our live show, Net at Night. That's kind of fun. In fact, if you want to listen to that live, that'll be live tonight at 6 o'clock Pacific, 6 to 7 on TalkShoe. TalkShoe.com. Amber MacArthur and I do that every Sunday night at 6 p.m. And we take calls on the internet. It's kind of an interesting idea. And of course, Twit, which is This Week in Tech, the big news show, which comes out later tonight. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'll see you next week on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1:59. Courtney Kramer is in the KFI News Center. Well, that's it for this edition of the Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.